You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Here's a question. If you could pick one thing you love about Boston, what would it be? WBUR is collecting the answers in Letters to Boston. Chloe Axelson is senior editor of Cognoscenti, WBUR's Ideas and Opinions page, and they've been driving the Letter to Boston project. So Chloe popped by Radio Boston a few days ago and told us what exactly makes a letter to Boston.
A letter to Boston is a short moment that our readers and writers have shared with us that helps to encapsulate what Boston means to them. So it could be anything from a restaurant to a ride on a bus to an experience with someone at a checkout counter at a favorite grocery store. But in those moments, we hope and we think that we've captured what Boston means to them.
So I'm picturing two friends, right? And it's a Friday night and they've had a little extra wine and they're sitting talking about their friendship. And one friend says to the other, do you know the time we had together that I think about with you the most? That's what you mean. But that's with people's relationship with Boston?
That's exactly right. So I think when you're talking about a friend or a romantic partner, you know, you love that person, you love the whole of them, even if they're not perfect. So there are quirks, there are oddities, there are things about that person that may drive you insane. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here. And I think the same goes for a place, and in this case, our city.
Now, when you asked people to write letters to Boston, was it like lots of people wanted to do this?
Lots of people sent us stuff.
Yeah. In a minute, we're going to listen to them, but give me a range, like from the most serious to the most, I don't know, frivolous or playful, or give me a range.
So I think the most serious came from a local writer named Ethan Gilsdorf, and he's going to be in the piece we'll hear. And Ethan wrote about coming to Boston with his mom, who was attending graduate school at Harvard when he was a young kid. Mm-hmm. And about a month after she entered her graduate school program, she suffered a major, major illness and spent most of the year at Mass General. And she survived, but barely. And Ethan, his memories from that time are of visiting his mother in the hospital. And for years and years after, he stayed away from the city because he couldn't bear it. He calls it the melodramatic mom mode or something like that. You'll hear it. And then there's definitely funnier ones, too. People talk a lot about the Charles River and the role that the river plays in their lives in Boston. People talk about restaurants and the relationships that they make with people behind the counter. People talk about driving. Mm-hmm. You'll hear that one, too, about how, you know, insane Massachusetts drivers and Boston drivers can be. And you hear about just the history of this city, whether it's John Adams' history or more local history to various neighborhoods around the city.
All right, let's not keep our listeners in wait any longer. We're going to hear a few of these letters to Boston, then we'll chat a little more after.
When I decided to move to Boston in 2018 from San Diego, people warned me that New Englanders can be unfriendly. But that hasn't been my experience, especially on public transportation. It's true.
The next Orange Line train to Oak Grove is now arriving.
I once saw a guy trip while running for an Orange Line train. He landed on the platform just outside the doors, and his Charlie card and IDs flew like frisbees in every direction. My fellow T-riders watched this happen over our phones and books and donuts. Then the three of us nearest him, without a word, decided on our roles. I slid my foot between the doors to hold it open. Another guy helped the man get up. A woman in hospital scrubs collected the contents of his wallet. He thanked us each with a glance and a nod, and then we went back to what we had been doing. I got off at the next stop.
Study book goes up in the other study book.
My name is Christina Ganim.
My name is Alicia Abbott. My family and I lived in New York City for nearly two decades before we came to Boston in 2009. We had only planned to stay for my husband's one-year fellowship, but at the end of that year, we didn't want to go back. For a long while, I still considered myself a displaced New Yorker. But at some point, Boston did feel like home. At Fresh Pond Reservoir in Cambridge, we met Park Ranger Jean. Before she retired 5 years ago, you might have crossed paths with her too. She might have even written you a ticket. Driving around in her Ranger cart, she made sure all the dogs and their owners followed the rules. My son Finn isn't good at following the rules. He was diagnosed with autism before he was 2. And at 12 years old, few boys moved as he moved, rocking from front foot to back. Few boys would suddenly scream to show excitement. Whenever Ranger Jean saw Finn running toward her golf cart, she didn't flinch. She smiled. And she often invited Finn to ride along with her, which he loved. In this small act, she seemed to say, "I see you in all your difference. You and your family belong here at Fresh Pond as much as the birders and the bikers, the runners and the walkers, the picnickers and the dog people. This park is your park, too."
My name is Ethan Gilsdorf. I grew up in Seacoast, New Hampshire. My parents got divorced when I was 6. As a little kid, we often visited Boston for the day, the Aquarium, Museum of Science, or Fenway Park. The summer I was 12, my mother moved to Cambridge so she could attend grad school at Harvard. In October, an aneurysm ruptured in her brain. I spent the better part of a year visiting her at Mass General. She survived, but barely. For years after, the city felt cursed, haunted, a do-not-enter zone. As an adult, I lived in Western Mass, Louisiana, Vermont, and France. But I finally re-entered the emotionally radioactive mom zone when I was 38, the exact age my mom was when she moved to Boston. Newly single, I found a cheap one-bedroom in Somerville. I wanted a fresh start, just like my mother had.
My name is Kat Rutkin. I drive a little pink hatchback. It's a Chevy Spark, and it's pretty recognizable, so I try not to be too much of a jerk when I'm out on the road. I grew up in New York, and I got my license when I was 16, but I didn't really use it for 10 years because I lived in Manhattan. I always thought New York was going to be the worst driving I'd ever experienced, but it was not. Last week, I almost got run off of a city street while I was driving my kids to school. When you're driving in Boston, nobody gives away their next move. I moved to Boston in 2011 from Brooklyn. Then in the summer of 2021, I was driving to a doctor's appointment on Starro Drive. I knew I was going to be late. I dodged through traffic with no blinker, and I didn't let anyone merge. I'd always been a steady and cautious driver. It took me 10 years, but now I'm just as unpredictable as anybody else.
My name is Tui Fan. During the pandemic, my partner Jimmy and I got into the routine of ordering takeout from a Noah Poke shop in Somerville every weekend. We fell in love with the freshness and simplicity of the food. Over time, the staff would recognize our eyes and voices from beneath our masks. Hi. One of their chefs would chat with me in Vietnamese, addressing me as younger sister. I called him older brother. If I came for a pickup without Jimmy, the staff would ask, "Where's Jimmy? Tell him to come by next week." Our stops at Manoa came to feel like visits to a relative's house. Fast forward 3 years, and Jimmy and I still order from our Manoa family every weekend.
My name is Dart Adams. I grew up at 47 Mass Ave on the border of South End and Lower Roxbury. I lived down the street from the South End Lower Roxbury chapter of the NAACP. The elders in my neighborhood told me stories about how Sammy Davis Jr., Quincy Jones, Martin Luther King Jr., and Coretta Scott King all lived in the neighborhood. One of my neighbors, Mel King, ran for mayor against Ray Flynn in 1983. I grew up hearing everything from R&B, soul, jazz, Boston space funk, reggae, calypso, soca, salsa, merengue, electro, freestyle, Latin hip hop, house, or rap blaring out of boomboxes, cars, windows, and storefronts. My neighbors were mostly Black and Latino. We had a sizable LGBTQ community that lived among us too. We were all neighbors and everyone looked out for each other. I love history and telling stories that don't always get told because that's what I learned from my community growing up in Boston.
Those were some of the letters to Boston that are being put together by WBUR's Cognoscenti. And Chloe Axelson, who's the senior editor, is still with us. There is so much there.
It's all the different subjects that you talked about, and there's an intimacy to it, Chloe.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
So one of the things that struck me in listening to Dart, who is, we talked to him a lot on Radio Boston. It's this little detail, right? But this is the stuff. So he talks about Quincy Jones, but he calls him Quincy Jones, which if you're from here, of course, you're going to call him Quincy Jones because that's the name of the city here. Anywhere else in the country, they would be like, dude, why are you putting a Z in his name, right? But it's those little details of all the ways that Boston sits in us that feel like they've come out. Did you learn any details about Boston that you didn't know through these letters?
You know, I think what struck me was how universal these experiences are, even if we haven't had them individually. So when I listened to Dart read his piece for us, I was struck by the history in his community and that he notices all the time. I mean, he's an author, he's a historian, he's a writer, he's thinking about this stuff all the time. But his ability to translate that to the page and then to the air was powerful, to just hear it in his own words, hear it from his living room, which is where he tracked that piece.
Did you or the other editors ever get mad at Boston? Based on what? I mean, there's a little bit of a love dimension to these letters, right? Mm-hmm. But I do wonder, was there ever a minute where you were like, hey, Boston, come on?
I think so. I mean, when we were first thinking about this project, it was really driven by a curiosity about what home means to people, because I think it can be defined in different ways. Is it an address? Is it a group of people? Is it a specific house? And we were curious about that question, but we also didn't want to have blinders on or be naive about the idea that in some way this place is perfect, because it's not. So I think in the process of putting these together, we wanted to have things that felt real, that felt true, because when you love something, it can be, it's nuanced oftentimes.
So you pointed out Dart was reading his letter. Can people go read these letters as well as hear some of them?
You sure can. Thank you for asking. They're on our website. We've published two of these so far. The first one came out in November, just before Thanksgiving, as people were preparing to go home. And this one that we just listened to published on Valentine's Day. And we hope to do more in the future as people continue to send us letters.
So I don't know if you can answer this question. I really don't, but I'm going to ask you. If Boston wrote back, what would Boston say to everyone who just wrote to the city?
Wow, that's a hard question. I think Boston would say, take it easy on the T. I need help. Don't mind so much the roads. They were cow paths initially. We have a lot of history in this place, and we should celebrate it. We are much more than Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. We've got a whole lot of different kinds of people and cultures, and we're friendly. We're not so cold as everyone says we are.
Chloe Axelson is senior editor of Cognoscenti, which is WBUR's ideas and opinions page. She spoke with us last week about the Letters to Boston project, and you can find Cognoscenti on our website at WBUR.org.